Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Are you a pack rat, or do you like to get rid of everything? What documents do you need to keep, and for how long? And what can be discarded, and when? Now, these are really critical, important questions for us. I like to get rid of everything. My husband likes to keep everything. So somewhere between the two of us, there's a balance. How do we find that balance? Well, we're going to get some answers. My guest today is Kim Lankford. She is a contributing editor with Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. And she's going to tell us what to toss and what to keep. Kim, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Well, thanks for having me.
Nice to see you again. You work on such a diverse subjects with Kiplinger, and so I'm so pleased to talk with you about this because I think this is a very important subject. I may make fun of whether or not you should throw it away, but in fact, there are some things we can get rid of, and there are some things that we do not want to get rid of, at least not for a long time. So let's start with the big thing, the most important thing, tax records. And that, to me, has got to be, well, first off, if you're ever audited, that's got to be the scariest thing in the world. So how do you go about doing this? What do you do with tax records?
Well, the good news is this time of year is the perfect time to go through all your tax records and figure out what to keep and what to toss. Because the key thing is that the IRS has up to 3 years after your tax filing deadline to audit you. So you want to keep for those 3 years your original forms, all of the supporting documents. You want to keep those canceled checks, your credit card receipts, everything that documents any deductions or credits that you're taking. Because for those 3 years after the deadline, the IRS can come back to you and ask for all kinds of evidence. But the good news is, after that, you can toss a lot of those documents.
So the three years is the key. That's the period which, after you file them, and would that be from the date that they were due or the date you filed them? I don't mean to be nitpicky, but somebody's probably out there asking that. Suppose you filed them in January. Would it be 3 years after January, or would it be 3 years after April the 15th?
To be safe, keep it forward until the tax filing deadline.
Okay.
And so this year it was
three
April
years
17th,
after April
so three
the
years
17th.
After that.
Okay. So you're going to keep everything. 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 Let me underscore that. Everything.
Everything that you probably sometime in March or April, you were sitting in a big pile of things, if you do this yourself, and you had all of those things organized to figure out what to put in every little slot in your tax forms. And all of that information that you use to come up with those numbers in the tax forms, those are the things that you're going to need to keep. So it's, you probably had that file together. Just keep that, put that somewhere safe. And then after the 3 years after that deadline, then you can decide what to go through. And you can toss a whole lot of that stuff after the 3 years.
Okay, so now let's talk about, we're 3 years down the road and you're looking at this pile of stuff in your office and thinking, maybe I ought to get rid of some of this. How do you know what you can get rid of and what you can't get rid of? Because you do have to keep some of it, right?
Exactly. And the thing that I say to keep for the longest amount of time is those tax forms themselves. The 1040 and the Schedule A, Schedule C, those actual papers that you sent to the IRS.
Well, what about the wage earning documents, like, you know, the W-2 forms or whatever those things are? That,
you know, those, if just for tax purposes themselves, those can also be tossed after those 3 years.
Okay.
Now, you may find other needs to keep those. And for example, and this is where I say it's really important to keep those tax forms as well as a few other documents because they can be clues for other things later on. For example,
like retirement funds and all that stuff.
That's a huge thing. I get so many questions from readers who, you know, decades ago had contributed to their IRA and they're not sure if they had made a tax deductible contribution or a non-deductible contribution. And that will make a huge difference in the tax bill when they finally withdraw the money. So it's really important to keep those tax forms and things like that. Things like evidence of what you had paid for investments when you first purchased them until you sell those investments. And whether you
That's right, because that has a lot to do with what kind of tax ramifications there have when you get rid of those items.
And in March, pretty much March and April every year, I get a lot of questions from readers who say, the tax form is asking me the date and the purchase price of my investments. I have no idea. It was so long ago. And sometimes you can get help from the mutual fund company or the company you purchased the stock from, the brokerage firm. But a lot of times it's just really good to hold on to those records yourself. So, and the tax forms themselves can also be helpful for if you're applying for a mortgage. A lot of times sometimes they will ask evidence of your income. It may go further back than those 3 years. Also, disability insurance, if you're applying for a policy, they base that on your income. You may need to provide extra evidence of that. And for disability claims, there's all kinds of things beyond tax reasons. So those forms themselves, and the other good thing is these days you can digitize so much. So yes. The forms don't take up a lot of room. It's all those canceled checks that take up space. But you can even just now, you know, for the things that are further back in the future, take a picture of it or scan it. You can save it on your computer. You could save it in an online storage like a cloud system. And then you don't need to even worry about having those papers there, but they're accessible if you need them.
Now, speaking of canceled checks, do you keep canceled checks?
Well, you know, these days you don't even really get canceled checks
That's right.
anymore.
I mean,
I actually make
a
point
a check?
Myself. Exactly. Yeah, my son, he probably has no idea. He sees me write them occasionally. But I actually, this time of year, right before I'm doing my taxes, I actually go through my online bank statements and for the things that I did pay checks for, because I still try to make a point for things like charitable contributions. I try to make a check for
it. So you have a record of it.
That does give me the record. So things like that for taxes, if you're going to need extra documentation, you don't have to, but I do it just to have that extra record there. And mm-hmm. I make a point to print that out because you're not getting all those checks back in the mail anymore. So you know, you have to go on your bank's online system and you can see where it was the canceled check there and then print it out and put that in your records. You don't have to do that, but I usually do it just so it's all there for that 3 years.
Well, how long do the banks make that kind of information available to its customers?
Well, that seems to vary a lot. I know that my bank merged with another bank earlier this year, and it seemed to change the amount
right.
of time that they kept that available. So a lot of times, if you need to piece things together in the future, you may be able to get things from the bank, or you may be able to get some help from your brokerage firm. But if you remember, as you're doing your taxes, that this is something that, you know, that you use to claim a deduction or credit, I say print that out or keep that online or keep some record yourself so you don't have to depend on how long their system can go back.
Well, because it seems to me like it might be risky, since you don't know what the bank policies are, it might be a good thing, especially if your bank has changed, is just to find out from the bank if you can get somebody to answer the phone, find out how long they actually make those online records accessible to their customers.
I think that's a really good idea. And especially, too, because as I was going through my taxes this year and printing out some things that I, you know, hadn't printed out in order to get deductions, I realized that it was much more difficult to get things after a certain time period. Maybe it was 6 months or so. But there were things even within the past year that mm-hmm. are more difficult to get. So maybe I think that's a great idea. Talk to your bank up front. Find out how long it is that they keep those easily accessible. And then just make a point, kind of, you know, mark on your calendar every few months or so, go through. And if you haven't printed out some of those things,
you may want to do it.
Yes. And this time of year, it's perfect timing because this is the time of year that the IRS is actually cashing your check that you may have sent in with your taxes.
Sure, sure.
And that's always really important to have a copy of that. So, you know, find
out. Or you may have made an online payment and you want to make sure you've got a record, a digital record of that.
That's because I have had to do that before. I have had to send in the copy to show them that I paid. Or if you pay quarterly taxes, mm-hmm. you want to make sure that you've got that evidence there, because that's just a real quick thing that, you know, if they say you haven't paid, you just show
right.
them that and it makes it easy.
Right.
So have that record somehow.
Okay, let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know that they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Kim Lankford. She's the contributing editor with Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, and we're talking about records and how long do you keep them? Do you and your spouse fight about what should be thrown out? Well, Kim has the definitive answer. And you can actually find this information online, right, Kim? Can you tell us where?
Yes. Well, I do the Ask Kim column at Kiplinger.com. Twice a week, I have a column going up on the website. And I also do the column every month in Kiplinger's Personal Finance. But you can find this column and a lot of other columns about taxes and tax deductions and records and things like that at Kiplinger.com in the Ask Kim column.
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit scary sometimes when you think I'm going to throw stuff away. But, and by the way, for our listeners, and you advise this, shred everything.
That is a great point, because I use the word toss, but I don't really mean toss.
We don't mean literally throw it out in the trash.
These are the documents that have all your personal information right there. I mean, your tax form itself has your social security number. You know, if you are getting a direct deposit, it'll have information about your bank. It'll have information about your job and credit cards. You want to be really careful when getting rid of this information.
There's a lot of information there that would just fall into the wrong hands, and that would not be a good thing. So, yes, so shred. Everything. When we talk about toss, really read that to mean shred it. Okay, so we've got the tax records. We're looking at how banks save information and what we need to know and what's going to be available to us if we do a lot of online banking. And, of course, you don't get checks anyway these days, so you got to go to a printout or something. And most banks, I think, do send you a summary of statements of accounts for the month. Maybe you need to keep those. That would have a record too of what's going on. Does your bank send you a statement?
Yes, and you know that's another good point, because I get a lot of questions from people about ATM receipts. Mm-hmm. And it's the same kind of concept with investment statements. I mean, you're usually getting your monthly statement from your bank or your brokerage or your mutual fund company. And as you get those statements, some of your throughout the month type statements become redundant. So, you know, if you've kept track of your deposits and withdrawals from your bank account, and then everything matches up at the end of the month with the statement they send you, or if you go online and see that it's all been recorded there, that's when you can get rid of some of those other papers, because it's already been recorded. It would be redundant otherwise.
Right.
Brokerage firms, the same thing. I get statements from them every month. And I could change to online statements, which I recommend. Actually, some brokerage firms give you a discount if you get online statements.
Oh, do they really? Yeah.
I haven't done that yet.
Well, that makes sense. You know, they're saving money.
They are saving money. And, you know, a lot of times, actually, so this is a great piece of advice for people, especially if they have low balances in IRAs and they're charged an annual fee. A lot of times, I think Vanguard is one of the ones who does this. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you can get a discount on the fee, or maybe have the fee eliminated if you get online statements.
Ask
if you can.
Let's go. I do need clarification on something. Now, we were talking about the tax information. Is there some stuff there you should keep forever?
You know, I recommend keeping the tax forms themselves.
Well, Kim,
as long as possible.
We know you're a keeper. I'm a thrower outer.
I mean, those, you know, and I don't want people who haven't kept them to go back and get worried. I just say, then you don't really need to worry as much about all of those supporting documents that you're going to toss after those three years.
Right. So that those 3 years are the critical time. You want everything. Everything you went in that justified what you put into your tax return. Keep it.
And the other key thing is, so the IRS has up to 3 years to audit you, up to 3 years after the tax filing deadline, unless you've left out more than 25% of your income.
If you have, then you probably deserve to be audited.
Then they can go up to 6 years. And if there's fraud, they can go forever. So, you know, I say sometimes if you're, you know, self-employed and you have income coming in from a whole variety of sources and it could be easier to lose track, you may want to hold on to some of those things
for
longer.
Yes, because you're in a different position. If you're self-employed, because you are the accountable person.
That's right. And you may have things, in, you know, when you have a W-2 income, you have one form and it's pretty obvious. You may have, you know, dividends here and there, things like that. But the bulk of your income is all from one place. From the other ones, you may, you know, accidentally leave something out. So I say if you're self-employed,
you may want to keep things a little longer. Yeah. And you want to keep those things for, because you're just protecting yourself because of that information. Okay. Now, we talked about keeping information from stocks and stuff like that. You know, one of the problems that I'm hearing, and within the last 2 days, I've heard two complaints about people and their car loans.
Ah.
Yeah. In one case, a woman paid off her car loan, and yet the company's coming back and saying that she owes a balloon payment. So, and this was a little while after she thought the car loan was paid. When she did not get the title, she finally checked with the lender and they're saying, no, you haven't paid it off. You got to make sure that before you toss anything like that, and she had not tossed her records, but you got to make certain that everything is completed, finished, finalized, et cetera, and probably wait several years afterwards as well.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you've got to make sure that whatever the next step is has been completed. So in her situation, until you get that title back, make sure that you keep all those documents, because until you get that title back, it hasn't been credited to you yet. Mm-hmm. And I, as a pack rat myself, would say even a little while after that, it sure mm-hmm. doesn't hurt to keep at least any documentation that says you have paid it off.
Right.
Some of those really key documents you may want to keep longer, just because, as in her situation, she was probably so grateful she still had those records
right.
and could
exactly.
go back and say,
exactly.
listen,
and I've heard two of the same kind of stories, and both of them involved lenders, banks that had actually been purchased by somebody else.
And
the transfer of records
so
is not
much.
Really great. And even one of them thought it had been paid off a while ago. So I guess you just have to kind of protect yourself, don't you?
And you need to look at what the big picture issues are, because a big loan like that, that's where you really, you may want to feel safe. Keep those documents
right.
longer. And if you do get any document of payoff, keep that and keep
mm-hmm.
that for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
because that's the key thing. I mean, that is the document that kind of, you know, is the culmination of all those other documents. If you have that evidence, that's really valuable.
Now, what about keeping things like utility bills, phone bills, stuff like that? Do you need to keep that very long, or it's paid and it's gone, or what?
Well, I say generally, unless you're taking it as a tax break. So if you're self-employed and have a home office and
sure.
take the home office deduction, then you'll want to keep those in your tax records for 3 years. But otherwise, I say just hold on to it until you get the next month's bill showing that you've paid it off. So you don't have to argue that, you know, just in case there's a situation where they say, well, you know, we actually said you owed X amount, and you can show your bill that had said, no, you said I owed Y amount, and here's the evidence
mm-hmm.
that I paid it
mm-hmm.
off. So as every month passes and you get the credit for what you had paid, then you can throw those. But for tax purposes, then you need to keep it in your records for up to 3 years. Now, utilities can be an interesting thing, because sometimes people are really...
Hang on to that thought. We're going to come back to utilities. Let's just let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Kim Lankford. She is a contributing editor with Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, and we're talking about toss it or keep it. So you were just talking about utility bills being a different animal.
Utility bills, if you plan to sell your house in the next year,
some
people find it to be helpful. This is no requirement, but some people find it to be helpful to have kept some of their utility bills just so they can show the prospective home buyer how much they pay in utilities. That's a question that sometimes people will ask. So
mm-hmm.
if you are planning on selling your house, you'll keep some of those because you may end up wanting to show that to a prospective buyer.
Well, I think a lot of prospective buyers want to know the heating and cooling costs for a house, and they're quite likely to ask for
it.
And,
you know, especially if you bought a new system and then the prices
right,
have gone
right.
down. I mean, you want
oh,
to be able
show
to get
it.
Credit for that. Exactly.
That's exactly right.
Now, home records, this actually brings up another big exception to that 3-year rule. I say it's a good idea to keep records of home improvements for as long as you own the house.
It's a great idea.
Major home improvements. Because the key thing is that most people these days no longer have to pay taxes on their home sale profits. There's a big exclusion. If you're single, you can exclude and you have lived in the house for 2 out of the 5 years before you sell it. You can exclude up to $250,000 in profits from your income. And if you're married filing jointly, you can exclude up to $500,000 in profits.
So, okay. But now the key is the word profit, right?
Profit. And that is right. So if you bought your house for $200,000 and you're married, you can sell it for $700,000 and you won't have to pay taxes on those gains. However, if you sell it for a greater profit than that, you will likely have to pay taxes on the gains.
Okay, but now you can go in and deduct improvements,
can you?
And that
is a key
That's
thing.
Why you want
and,
those records.
And the other time that you will have to pay taxes on your profits is if you do not live in the house for 2 out of the 5 years before the sale. So if you have, if you sell the house before 2 years, there's some exclusions to this. So there's some you may or may not have the tax bill, but you may.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to do whatever you can to lower the tax bill then. Also, if you lived in it for several years, but then rent it out for a few years and then sell it, you may have to pay taxes on the profits. But you can add the cost of those improvements to your purchase price,
right.
which affects it's your tax basis, which will then lower the tax bill. So some of those things, not just, visits by the plumber, it's not things like that, but it's things, home improvements that add value to your home, like adding a deck or, know, updating your kitchen or, mm-hmm. you know, adding an extension. Mm-hmm. And these are big ticket items. I mean,
things
you make tens of thousands of dollars on. Keep a hold of those records because that can make a huge difference in your tax bill if you're in a situation where you have to pay taxes
right.
on your home sale profits.
Right. Yeah. And you might. I mean, it depends on what the housing market does around here, but.
And if you live in the house for a very, very long time, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. On the flip side, if you live in it for a short time and you have made and have been lucky enough to make a profit, you know, you still can benefit
right.
from lowering that tax
right.
bill a bit.
Right. Yeah, that's great. That's a great idea. All right. Now, what about things like credit card bills? Can we just toss those? Well, maybe you were talking about, you're talking about phone bills, I think.
For credit card bills, I mean, sometimes they will include things that have tax deductible items in them. So if you're self-employed, for example, you'll probably want to keep on to
right.
all the credit card statements and your receipts for those specific items. But if it's not a taxable event, you want to just make sure that everything's been reported correctly at the end of that month. So, you know, you've kept your receipts during the month, and then as soon as everything shows up on your statement, then you can toss some of those. And then on the same concept, after you've gotten those statements, a lot of times you'll get a year-end statement, or you'll have a year-end statement at least online. And once you find out that all of those things match up, then you can toss some of those records. So as things become redundant, and the same thing with investment statements,
mm-hmm.
you know, you usually get a year-end statement that summarizes all those statements you've had every month. If everything matches up, then you can toss those. But wait till you get that year-end statement and you get credit for everything, because if something does seem strange, you want to have that record until everything is straightened out.
Now, going back to the home improvement records, I noticed here that my notes say keep those for 3 years after you sell the home. Why is that? For taxes?
Exactly.
In case the IRS comes back and audits you?
Because perfect. Then they become part of your tax records.
I'm smarter than I thought I was about this.
It's the exact same thing, because then they become part of your tax records, and then you'll want to keep them with those tax records for up to 3 years afterwards.
Okay, so that is important. Now, what about insurance papers, documents, if you change insurance companies? Should you keep the old policy
Life insurance and these long-term type policies, so life insurance, long-term care insurance, the type of policies that you're not likely to have to collect on for many, many years in the future. I am very careful about keeping all my statements that I've paid the bill.
All those.
And usually, mm-hmm. like from my life insurance company, usually gives me a receipt after I make my payment every year that says I made my payment.
Mm-hmm. And car insurance too, probably.
Car insurance. And the interesting thing about car insurance is, you know, those policies are only in effect usually for a year.
Right.
So hold on to it for that time period. You may want to hold on to it for a year after that, just so you can compare where things have, you know, increased or decreased or any extra discounts that you're getting, and just so you know what your coverage had been. But after that, the policy, you know, usually is only in effect for a very specific time period for homeowners insurance, auto insurance. So keep that policy for that entire year. That's going to be very, very important, because if you do have a claim, you'll be able to look down there and make sure you get credit for everything. But after that policy is no longer in effect, if you haven't had a claim, then you can usually toss that. If you have had a claim, I'd say keep it a little longer until that entire claim
mm-hmm.
is settled,
mm-hmm.
even if it's beyond that policy period, because sometimes it can take quite a while for claims to get settled. And you just want to make sure you get credit for everything you've been paying for.
Right. And also things like if you have a tree that falls and you have to pay for it, you may want to keep records of that as well. Would that be true?
I think that's a great idea. I mean, you definitely want to keep records of everything until the insurance claim is settled. Sometimes if things aren't covered by insurance, you may even be able to take a tax break for it.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
A casualty loss break. And if you've kept those records during the year, then you can make sure that you can get any either tax or insurance credit. And also, if you end up having a dispute with your neighbor, you can get credit for, you know, show what you've done. Exactly. So think about, you know, sometimes, you know, you may want to keep things beyond these standard limits. If it's something that you think, you know, there may come up a reason and I just want to have those documents. And that's where it's really good that you can digitize so much now,
mm-hmm.
because you can take a picture of it,
Amen.
Can scan it, you can keep it on your computer, and it doesn't have to fill up all the space.
Okay, we only have just a few seconds here. If people want to write to you, where do they go?
Kiplinger.com. You can click on the Ask Him column. I'm usually there on the homepage somewhere. I have new columns coming up twice a week, and you can send your emails to askkim@kiplinger.com. And I love hearing from readers. That's how I get so many article ideas.
Kim, you are wonderful. It's such a delight to see you again. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here in Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Kim Langford. She's a contributing editor with Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, and it's always a delight to see you. I'm Shirley Rooker, and thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.